Hello and welcome. This is the Bits vs. Byte podcast. I am your host, Amar Grigic, and today my guest is Kees Veldhuizen. He works at Crudel, and you're going to tell all about what you do, so welcome.
Thank you.
I would like to start off with a little bit about your background and also how you got to Crudel. So could you tell a little bit about that?
Yes, of course. Yeah. I studied at the University of Twente, and over there I already started my own startup together with an investor. And that was about peer-to-peer lending. And it was initially a huge success, but ultimately failed due to bad repayment rates. After that, I went to Heineken Netherlands. I worked there as a digital project manager and consultant. And after 5 years, I joined Crudel. Crudel was the innovation lab of Aegon, which is a Dutch insurance company. And at Crudel, we try out new concepts within the insurance industry. Like many companies do, a small lab where we can try out new things relatively cheap and fast. And when things turn out well, we scale it up within the Aegon organization. And after about 4 years, we did a management buyout. That was last year, and from now on, Crudel is independent.
Mm. And what do you try to provide? So you said you started up as a startup. It's actually a startup within Aegon, right? That was kind of the thing. Or as you said, the innovation lab, but it actually became a separate company. So what do you try to provide as a service?
Yeah, so one of the success projects within Crudel, within the innovation lab, was to pay how you drive insurance technology. So basically how that works is if you drive, we can detect your driving behavior, and the better you drive, the more discount you get at the end of the month. There we saw some great success things going on, like we saw people were driving more carefully. So the driving scores, we calculated the scores, were going up. The claim rates were going down substantially, with more than 30%. And we saw also people using the app about 20 times per month. So there was a lot of engagement going on. And at the moment, we were trying to scale it up within Aegon. That was not possible anymore because Aegon, they were not focusing on car insurance anymore, but on pensions and life insurance. So that's why we stepped out. Mm-hmm. And we saw there a huge potential in the market because, as we see it, the current insurance premiums, they're calculated based on historical tables, risk tables, on averages, but not on your actual behavior. Mm-hmm. So we think that's not fair. And with our technology, we can build those prices based on behavior.
Yeah, and how does that work? So do you have to be insured by an insurer that also works with you? How does that work for someone that's wanting an insurance that they would pay for maybe less or whatever? So how does it work?
Yeah, so the Crudel brand is now a business-to-business brand. So we provide technology to other insurance companies. You just have to go to them and buy an insurance product, and we deliver the technology on the background. So we deliver the app branded with the insurance brand.
Yeah, so say for instance I'm insured by X company, and I don't know which one there is, but there is one insurance company that uses you, for example. So I install an app, right? Is that their app or is that your app that's actually measuring all those things like driving and stuff like that?
Yeah, so as a customer, you just download the app and sign up, and that's it, basically. Mm. So it starts detecting your driving behavior automatically. So once you start driving, it detects like, oh, you're driving. Once you stop driving, it detects that you're stopped driving. Mm-hmm. And it's even that smart that it can detect if you're, for example, on a bus or on a train, it will not count that as a trip because we can recognize that.
And how do you recognize that? That's an interesting point. But how can you see that? So how can you see that someone is on a train, for example, or on a bus? Because a bus is even harder, I think, in that sense. Because on a train, you could probably see, okay, GPS, it's probably a train track, right? But on a bus, it's a little bit different. So how do you detect that?
Yeah, there's some AI technology inside. So we learn your driving behavior. Mm. We built up a driving profile of your driving behavior. And because we measure for how fast you drive, how smooth you drive, and based on that, we can recognize you if you're driving for the next time.
Mm.
That means also that in the first couple of trips, you have to learn it. So you have to tell us if you were the driver or not.
Ah, okay. So you detect, for example, that you were in some kind of a car or a bus or something, but you still need the user input in the first few goes just to be sure, right?
Yes.
Ah, okay. And what I saw on your website is that you call yourself an insurtech, which is probably something that came from the fintech kind of is that right? Right.
That's right. Yeah. I think fintech was a bit earlier than insurtech. Yeah.
And what does that mean in your opinion? So what does that entail to be an insurtech company?
It's basically trying to disrupt the current industry with technology-driven solutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what was interesting to me as well is that you're providing all these services to these insurance companies, of course. But what does it add to their kind of offering that they have, right? So when you look at it from an insurance company perspective, they're like, okay, people will maybe pay less or have a kind of a bonus at the end or whatever. So what does it add to that insurance company in that sense to use your platform?
Yeah. So what we see in our results is that if you use our technology, you will attract a different kind of customers who are more risk aware. So it's a way to get the right customers in your insurance portfolio. And once you can attract those customers, you can also sell them other insurance products. Because those people are more responsible and will claim less.
Hmm.
And if you can give them a discount upfront already, then it's a way to attract new, more customers at all.
Yeah, because normally when we look at the car insurance branch, for example, in the Netherlands, the thing that you see is, of course, I don't know if it's in other countries as well, but I know in the Netherlands for sure, of course, they have the kind of no claim discount that you have. So when you, for example, don't have an accident for a few years, you will get some kind of a discount on your car insurance, right?
Yeah.
You try to provide a service that also kind of rewards the people that drive safely, right? Because you can have a no claim for 5 years, but that doesn't mean you're a good driver, right?
Exactly. For example, when you're 18, you don't have any driving experience, no claim, and you have to buy in a car insurance, you will pay about 2,000 euros a year. That went up, I think, more than 50% in the last 2 years. And it also really depends on some factors how much you pay. So it depends on where you live. Do you live here in Rotterdam? It could be that you pay already three times as much as you would live in a village in the north of Holland. Depends on your car. If you drive a Volkswagen Golf, you will pay a lot more than if you're driving in a small Fiat. And of course, your age. Mm.
Yeah.
All factors you cannot influence yourself. Yeah, you can move to another city, but that's not really a fair thing to ask. And with our technology, you can prove that you're a good driver. Without looking at all those external factors.
Yeah, because how do insure... or insurance companies work with your platform? So how do they get the kind of data that they need from your side? Is that still a manual process for a lot of things, or is it also sometimes integrated in their product? How does that work?
Obviously, there is some integration needed, but not that much, because we need some information from the customers. But we don't like much information because of the privacy. We basically only need a policy number. Mm-hmm. And what we send back to them is a score. And some policy administration systems, they can cope with a monthly discount, which is the best. Because we tested with that, and if you drive this month for discount for the next month, there's a short reward cycle, and that works out very well, psychological. But sometimes it's not possible, and then they give them discounts after a year, for example.
Mm. And how do you calculate that score? Because that's interesting to me, is that how do you know that, I don't know what the scores can be, but is there some kind of a range within those scores, or how does that work?
Yeah, how it works, there's a score from 1 to 100. Mm-hmm. And if you score more than 80, you will get the full discount, which is most times about 20%, but it can also be 30%. And if you score higher than 60, you get a 10 or 15% discount.
Mm-hmm.
And that's based on existing research. We made an algorithm ourselves. So we look at speed. So we know where you're driving, on what road you drive, and what the speed limit is. So based on that, we can calculate what part of your trip you were speeding. We look at braking behavior. So we do not punish you when you stop, when someone's crossing the street suddenly, but we look at the pattern. So if we detect many short braking events, that is an indicator of risky driving behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Because probably there's not enough space between you and the car before you, for example, and then you're a more aggressive driver. And another interesting factor is time of driving. So we saw in the public data in the Netherlands that there are relatively more accidents during the night, up to 6 times more accidents than during the day. So the risk to get involved into an accident during the night is 6 times more than, for example, in rush hour Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So a rush hour is, there are a lot of accidents happen, but it's relatively safe if you look at the numbers.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Do you kind of factor that in the score as well? So when you look at the nighttime driving and the rush hour driving?
Yeah, we played around with that, and it initially was a huge factor, because it is a huge factor if you look at this from a risk perspective. But we got feedback from the users that's not always fair, and that makes sense, because if you work during the night, you have to go to your
yeah.
job anyway.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a smaller factor now.
Mm, mm. And that's something that that a lot of people don't know, is that, of course, I mean, driving during the night, I mean, it makes sense that it's that you get more accidents, because the vision is just poorer, right? And especially when it's not lit or whatever, right?
Yeah. Less vision, more tired. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. And especially, as you said, some people work during the night, and yeah, then you need to drive at night. That's just the way it is. What I was wondering about as well is that you, next to kind of the services that you have, you also kind of do some kind of product development as well. So maybe you can elaborate on that a little bit more, what you try to provide there as well.
Yeah, so to our... The first reason that we do it, we're trying to create a new category, new segment within the insurance industry, and we're building it up, but that needs time. Mm-hmm. So we do other things as well. And what we basically did during our cuddle time within Aegon is building new concepts and test them and optimize them together with users. So that's a service we're also doing, providing for other companies.
Mm. And how does that work? So what kind of question would a company, for example, have to you to kind of get into that product development mode? So were they like, okay, we want to, for example, I'm an insurance company. It could be that, right? I'm an insurance company and I need some kind of product, right? How does that work? So how would I go about that if I want your help with that?
Yeah, so what we see now within insurance companies, a lot of times they're doing design sprints, for example, and they're doing they work out a model, an ID within 1 week, and then it stops. So there are a lot of IDs alive within companies which are not realized.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are the missing piece there, so we can grab that ID and start building it and optimize it, and that's what we do.
And because that's interesting that you mentioned the design sprints as well, because that I didn't even know that a lot of companies do that, right? Because it's not new, but it is a fairly newer process, right? To do a design sprint and stuff like that. But why do you think that those kind of design sprints don't get to a product? Is that just time and money, or how does that how do you see that?
Yeah, I think that's the same reason. Like, I'm trying now to sell our technology in the Dutch market, and I hear different reasons why a company do not innovate or try out this new ID. And that is capacity, of course, because it takes time from the employees. Also, top-down commitment. If you want to achieve something within an organization, there should be top-down commitment. And what often happens is those kind of innovative ideas, they stay within the innovation department. And also, I talk a lot with innovation managers within companies. Really good people to talk with, but a lot of times it stays there. So that's also a reason. And another reason is, of course, the risk impact. Within larger organizations like insurance companies, there are often reputation boards, for example. So people from different departments within an organization, they have to decide if a concept is too risky or not to try out in the market. So they're really risk aware. I think that's also an advantage of our company. We're used to work within a complex and regulated environment like insurance companies.
Yeah, and that's good that you mentioned that. I wanted to come back on that a little bit as well, is that you were part of a bigger entity at one time. How has kind of moving out of that entity, how has that changed your way of work at the moment? Does that change? Does it change also maybe the company culture within your kind of company? How does that affect it?
Most of all, we're way more focused at the market, of course, because when you step out of a company, you lose your monthly salary, of course. So you have to start all again. So you have to make money instead of creating value within an organization. I think that's the biggest change, and it's interesting to be on the other side. Like, I used to live to work in an innovation department, and I was the one who was inviting startups, and now I'm the other side. So that's interesting. So it's a lot of work and a lot of like if there are 100 companies you visit and only one will probably say yes, so we have to keep going and to stay positive, and that's interesting.
Yeah, and that's I can imagine, because you said it was last year, right? So it's maybe been on a year for now. Let me rephrase that. So how do you keep going? Because that's interesting as well, because you're essentially, you were kind of a startup innovation lab within a different company. Now you're a startup, actually starting from scratch again. How do you keep going? So how do you keep that up? I think it's interesting to know that a lot of startups maybe fail within the first year, right? There's kind of a statistic, I think, about that. How many do? So how do you listen, for example, to your market and see where, is that just going to the companies and asking them? How do you keep that going?
Yeah, it's basically keep on talking with customers, with companies, and be creative. So if there's not enough traction within an insurance company, you might have to look at a different
sector.
Company, different domain, like the lease market or whatever. So be creative, and you have to... you have to pay yourself some salary, of course, to stay alive. And there are two ways to do that. One is to go to an investor, and then you buy time, basically. The other way is to do like we do, do product development beside that, just on a paid basis.
Yeah, so you work for other companies in that sense that you just can create for them as well, just so you have also the time to, and of course the money to expand on this and see how that works. Because that's where a lot of people that I talk to that are starting startups, they will also have that same problem, right? They need money, they need but also need the time to be able to invest in it. And they will usually say, okay, I'm going to work, I don't know, 3 days a week or something like that in a company. And next to that, those 2 days, I'm going to build out my startup, right? So I was wondering about, you started this product and you're working on that. So what do you see kind of for the future in that kind of, for example, in that insurance market? So what do you see there happening there in terms of insurance kind of coupled with the technology in that sense? What do you see there?
Yeah, so beside the car products, we're also looking at health products. So we see also there a great potential. Because I think it's good to reward people for healthy behavior and also in a financial sense. So there are a lot of fitness apps and platforms already, but if you can link that to insurance, that's a really good business case for the insurer and for the customer. So we're doing some testing with that now with a Dutch health insurer. I think trends like that will go on. So that's called usage-based insurance. So you pay based on your behavior, based on how much you use something. For example, with mobility, now you insure a car, but that doesn't make sense anymore in a few years because nobody has his own car anymore. And you order a car and go on a train, on a bike, or a scooter, or what else?
Self-driving.
So we have to insure mobility in general, so we have to also detect what you're doing at the moment, and so that's a trend, usage-based insurance. And I think another big development will be the decentralization, because now the current insurance industry is really it works like this. So there's an insurance company, and there's a broker, and there's the customer. On the other side, there's often a reinsurer. So that's a whole chain. And everybody's making some money. So if you look at how much money is paid back to the customer, it's only about 50 or 60%. And the rest is all cost. And that will, things will change there with the use of algorithms or a blockchain. So parties and people will be cut out. And do things like accepting new customers, payout claims, risk assessments, etc. This can all be automated.
And how do you, you mentioned blockchain there, because that's such a hype word in some cases, right? But how do you see that working? So how would that look like in your opinion? So how would an insurer use that, for example, to better their products?
Yeah, I think we can then just remove some parties in between, and then your policy within your insurance policy will be on a smart contract, for example, and it's there. We don't need the reinsurer anymore, or we don't need a broker anymore. You communicate directly with the blockchain, and if you combine that with the peer-to-peer vision, which is basically the core essence of insurance. So we together as a group, we pay a little bit, and if something happens with one of us, we pay out to that one. You can really do that on a blockchain in a smart contract. There are the rules: when do you pay out, when not, how much does everyone pay? But the challenge there is, of course, someone needs to decide if it's a fair claim or not. So there are challenges there, and so there might still be some human help needed.
Of course. Yeah, you cannot do everything through technology. That's for sure. I mean, humans are a little bit, still a little bit better at designing something based on context information, right? So this is the case, but this is also the context around it, so you can make a fair decision, right? And yep. that's the real thing here. So what I was wondering about as well is that you talked about that health insurance, actually services on top of health insurance. I think that's interesting because in most cases, people will say, okay, I don't use my health insurance, right? I'm not using it at the moment. Hopefully. I hope nobody has to use it. But of course, in some cases, you're healthy and you're maybe exercising, you're not smoking, you're not drinking that much. That's something that's interesting to me for a couple of reasons, is that I sometimes feel like it's unfair, right? It's kind of an unfair system. I'm not using it. I'm paying a lot of money. When you're in the Netherlands, it's about maybe, if you're normally insured, it's about 115 euros, something like that, a month. Do you kind of feel that it's unfair as well? Is that also one of the reasons why you're kind of building these products to make it a little bit more fair?
Yeah, it's a sensitive topic, so you have to be do the right thing. So if you're ill, you need to be taken care of, and you don't need to pay more than others.
Sure.
I think that's so we do shouldn't mess with the basic insurance system, health insurance system in the Netherlands, because I think that works fine. But on top of that, I think it's still good to reward people for a good behavior. And as an insurer, you can do that by giving discount, of course, but you can also by promoting other health-related things like healthy food, fitness gym discounts, etc., to create an ecosystem around your insurance product. And That's about the current system. And if you look at the health system in general, what's, I think, a bit wrong in our Dutch system is that insurance companies are not rewarded for making their customers better. So as a health insurer, if you make people more healthy, you're not financially compensated for that. So you don't make more money. So there's no motivation to make your customers more healthy.
Yeah.
And they are focusing on that, all the health insurance in the Netherlands, but that's more from a vision done, like we want to make people better, but not from a financial perspective.
And it's a tricky point there as well, right? I mean, people will say, okay, they're just going to make me healthy, and that then they get their incentive, right? And that's maybe what people will think about that, right? I want to ask you one more question to wrap up, and that's the last question I always ask. So, what are you most proud of since you started this whole project and this whole company?
Yeah, I think when we tested out that connected car product, that pay how we drive product, we saw we could impact the behavior of people. So people were starting to drive better. So in the first 6 months, the driving score went up with about 10%. So that means that's good for them because they pay less insurance premium. It's good for the insurer because they pay out less of claims, but also good for the world, right? So there are less road accidents, less pollution. So the moment SRB could really impact the behavior of people, and also by doing some gamification tactics, for example, rankings worked out very well. That's great. So that's the way I want to go on, and so use technology for in a good way.
Very good. How can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, so go to crudel.io. That's the website.
Okay, sure. Thank you for being here and for having talked to us. And for the listeners, of course, you can find the Bits vs. Byte podcast on bitsvsbytes.com and also on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. It's all Bits vs. Bytes and all major podcasting platforms and YouTube. So thank you for listening. Until next time.